Shov Tim Perek Gimel Pasuk Chaf. So Ehud has brought a mincha to King Eglon. Then he has cleared the room. He sent away all the Jewish people who accompanied him and then told Eglon, I have a secret that only you can hear. And Eglon cleared the room of all of the courtiers and attendants and court people who had been around him. Not even security. Just Eglon sitting in his throne, massively obese, unable to move. Ehud, the small Jewish crippled man with a withered right hand, standing in front of him, appearing to be no threat whatsoever. The Ehud bought a love. So Ehud came close to King Eglon. He approached the throne, and as if to speak to him directly and kind of whisper into his ear, there are listening ears everywhere, so that even the microphones and bugs in the room wouldn't catch it. Behu Yoshev Ba'alias HaMekeira Asher Lo Levado. And where was Eglon at the time? Where were the two of them located? They were, Eglon was sitting alone in his upper cooling chamber. Aliyah, his attic, his rooftop, Mekeira, like the word car, cold, that was for him alone. So he's sitting alone in this upper chamber where he sat all through the summer to try to get some kind of relief from the heat that a very large man is going to suffer from a great deal. And Vayomer Ehud, Devar Elokim li Elecha. And Ehud said to King Eglon, I have a word of God for you. And then, remarkably, Vayakam Me'al Hakisei. Eglon stood up and rose from upon his throne, which, if you knew Eglon, you would know was very unusual, a remarkable occurrence, because for such a large man, he rarely did much physical exercise of any way. Why is it that he began to rise? Why is it that he got up from his seat? He got up because out of respect for the fact that Ehud said the name of God. And this right there, the rabbis tell us in Medrash Bamidbar, in Medrash Rus, the rabbis tell us that this gave Eglon tremendous zechus. Eglon had two daughters. Now, whether or not they were actually his daughters or granddaughters because of the number of years that are going to pass, but the way it's quoted in the Medrash is that Eglon's daughters were Rus, the famous Ruth later on, who will marry Boaz and eventually lead to the great dynasty of David and Shlomo HaMelech and all of Malchus Beis David, and Orpah, the other daughter, who has a far different fate in store. Orpah is going to become daughter-in-law to Naomi as well, but when Naomi says, don't come with me back to the land of Israel, Orpah abandons her, goes out, and according to the Gemara, spends the following evening with 1,000 different men, and emerges unsurprisingly pregnant with a child who will be an enormous foe of the Jews, a Goliath, who eventually is going to kill many Jews and represent a tremendous obstacle for the Jewish people till David HaMelech wipes him out. Spoiler alert. So these two daughters represent two different facets of Eglon. One facet is the idea of oppressing the Jews and being an enemy of the Jews. That's what Orpah represents, and that's what Eglon had done for the past 18 years. But this standing up in his chair at great effort on his part to honor God, that's where the zechus for having Rus as his offspring is going to come from. Obviously, he is not going to have the chance to father her subsequent to this because he is not going to live more than 5 more minutes. But nevertheless, his already existing daughter Rus, or his future grand or great-granddaughter Rus, who is going to come, comes only because of this tremendous zechus that is going to link him eventually to the royal house of David HaMelech. So one can't underestimate this moment. Chaf Aleph, Vayishlach Ehud es Yad Samolo, Vayikach es Acherev Me'al Yerech Yemino. So immediately, knowing he's got the king literally exactly where he wants him, and the king is vulnerable because he's already out of breath from just the act of rising up from out of his throne, Ehud stretched out his left hand, his whole hand, not his crippled one, grabbed the sword that was strapped to his right thigh, Vayiska Eha Bevitno, and he stuck it into his stomach. The word toka, tokea, can mean to smite or hit. So he struck at the massive folds of fat. And again, this is kind of gruesome, but this is actually part of what the next several psukim are going to tell us happens. So he stuck it into the king's stomach, chavbeis, vayavo gam hanitzav achar halahav. And as he's sticking in the sword, the handle went right into the massive stomach of Eglon after the blade. Vayizgor hachelev ba'ad halahav. And the fat covered up the blade and even the handle because he was so enormous and had so many rolls of obesity. One couldn't even see that there was a sword sticking out of him because his body covered it up. Kilo shalaf hacherev mibitno, because Ehud never pulled the sword out of his stomach, but rather stuck it in there with one mighty strike and left it there. Vayetze haparshadona. And then The food, the entrails, came out of the wound. So the king has this sword sticking out of him, and his innards are leaking out from afterwards. Ehud couldn't tell whether his sword had actually pierced all the inner organs and given a mortal blow, so he just pushed it in as far as he could. The digested food that had been in the stomach is now flowing out, but one can't tell because the body is covering everything. He knew that removing the sword would then leave gore everywhere all over the throne room, so he simply just left it there. Parshadona, which it could be the digested food, but we're going to see that what he's going to do next is he's going to leave through the curtains and try to hide the evidence for as long as he possibly could. And so Ehud has assassinated the king, who is lying there dying but unable to do anything about it, and now he has to make a hasty exit.